Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
I talk about the incredible experience that you have at a place like Ohio State, and if you act right, do right, you'll have a job. I guarantee. We guarantee that. I hope that's our legacy, and we won a lot of games and represented this great university and great state the right way.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I am delighted to announce that this morning, the Board of Governors unanimously approved a plan of expansion that will bring a National Hockey League team to Seattle, Washington, to play beginning in the 2021-2022 season.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Luca.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
All right, 12:01 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080, The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this hump day.
Hump day!
As we get you for a get ready for a good show today. We've got Kerry Eggers in studio for 1 hour.
Kegs and Eggers.
It's Kegs and Eggers edition.
Let's go. Who's bringing the keg? Let's talk some Jailblazer basketball.
I always kind of assume you have the keg, but maybe that's the wrong idea.
I wheel one of those pony kegs around with me everywhere I go. You never know when the mood's going to strike you.
That's a fair point.
Right?
Very fair point.
No, it's going to be fun. That's an era of basketball. I think we're all awaiting a documentary someday. The book, he beat everybody to it with the book, and we got it a couple of weeks ago and had a chance to dive into it a little bit. And
yeah.
It's painful but fun to reminisce about that era of Blazer basketball, because you open it and it starts with the collapse and you're like, oh, here we go. And there's quotes from guys that were in the game and the announcers.
They thought it was a done deal. Mike Rice said he was scheduling tee times in Indiana.
Yeah.
Antonio Harvey said he was looking at his hand going into the fourth quarter and saying, oh my God, I'm going to have a ring on this hand by next year.
Yep, there was a national, I think, NBA writer, I can't remember who it was quoted saying they were calling and booking their hotel in
Peter
Portland.
Peter Vesey,
was booking his hotel in Portland for the NBA final. So that's how it begins. It's a painful way to start a book, and then it goes on from there.
By the way, not a good start, P1 Cody, who tweeted us, I can't believe you guys stole Cowherd's opening music.
I know.
Come on, what are we doing here?
We need to be better than that.
No, we're not going to play that hypothetical funny joke game. That guy's stealing our music.
This
I'm hurt.
Our song. Well, to be fair, did we steal it from Oregon football, or did we have it before Oregon football?
Do you know what year Oregon started doing it?
I cannot remember off the top of my head. I feel like Oregon probably had it first.
But here's the thing. I had never been to an Oregon game and heard it.
Okay.
But I don't go to nearly the amount of games you do.
Sure. I obviously knew that was the song that they played.
I don't know. I'm going to say us just because I want to win this argument.
What the hell? Let's do it.
I need to actually get a feel on our listeners about something that happened to me in the office this morning. So I get in and I'm reading and I'm kind of preparing for the show, thinking about, oh, we talk about this, talk about that. And a coworker come up who I like a lot. And he goes, hey, I heard the show yesterday. Are you really 23? This is somebody that, by the way, is pretty, he's up there in the power ladder.
He's like in the upper echelon in the building.
And before I get to say any response to him, he goes, let me tell you why I think that was a mistake yesterday.
Like,
and
admitting that you're 23, yeah, even though you're not 23.
Right. Well, okay, so I go, oh. But in my mind, I'm thinking he's being sarcastic, right? His tone, his approach. If I said his name, you would go, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. So I turn my chair and I go, okay, kind of curious what you have here.
You play along as a 23-year-old.
Right.
Do tell me why it's no good that I'm 23.
He goes, if I'm 45-year-old listener, I automatically am not listening to your show anymore.
Oh, you don't care what the 20-year-olds have to say.
You're as old as my kid. Why do I care? And I go,
wait, I mean, you popped out a kid pretty quick then, but okay, maybe.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I can see where you're coming from, but I would also counter with this. I think a good portion of our listeners, not that they're super political, but I think they're smart enough and they follow the political climate, and have their own channels, right, left, middle, whatever. I would say a good chunk of like the prominent political pundits right now, like the ones who are really resonating with folks, are like sub 40-year-old people.
For the most part, yeah.
Now, I know there's some really good ones that are older. I get that. I'm not discounting that. I'm talking about the ones that are resonating. And what I mean by that is they're filling up college campuses. They're filling up Keller Auditorium-type places, theaters. They are right. All over these news networks. They're huge on social media. I would make an argument a lot of them. There's more sub-40-year-old ones, and I don't think people care anymore. Now, when you and I first started doing this years ago, we ran into the cliche caveman sports radio listener.
What do you guys know? You're not as old as I am, so I don't care.
And I used to always think that was funny. It's like, what does that matter when if we're giving an opinion on football or basketball? I remember I responded one of the times somebody had texted that, and I just bothered me. So I responded, you do know Jason Sukanik was like 29 when he started doing primetime, right? And I remember the response was, no, but that's different. And I thought, it's really not. It's really not.
It's pretty similar.
But, you know, give people some information, and if it doesn't match up with what they originally think, they don't want said information. So I'm just curious. I'm not 23, by the way, anybody wondering out there.
Well, and that's the bigger issue.
I finally told him, I'm like, wait, do you really think I'm 23? He's like, you're not 23? And I go, dude, I've been here 6 years. You think I started at this company when I was 17?
Also, you have a six-year-old daughter?
She's going to be 7 in like 3 weeks.
Right.
And he goes, well, how old are you? And I told him my age, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry. He apologized, and we laughed, and he walked away. I go, I can't believe he thought I was 23.
You got to be able to connect the dots there. That was a sarcastic line from me yesterday, wishing you a happy birthday. Because
I thought everybody picked up on that sarcasm, but he didn't. And he's actually kind of a smart person, so I'm like, wait, maybe a lot of other people didn't.
Yeah, we always get the label for being the young guys. So I say, hey, what are you turning 23? How old are you now? 23 years old?
Yeah.
See, I think now there are certain aspects to truth of what you're pointing out, that I think in certain fields, and it depends on what you're talking about, age doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I think all of us to a certain extent have a level of ageism.
Well, and only we if probably, you do something
I should
real.
Get off
we
my
all
lawn
do
now.
To a certain extent. Like if a younger kid comes along and you're like, eh, this kid doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Well, look, but there's a difference.
Everybody
for
me. Does that.
That's how I feel every day.
Right. There's a huge difference for me, though. Let's take two former interns as an example on our show. One former intern got on the airwaves and actually told us Mike Riley was not a good coach. Gary Anderson was better than him, right. And that he was drastically overrated.
Yes.
Oops.
I don't care if you're 18 or if you're 55. That's a stupid opinion. That is when you lose my respect. You lose my feelings or thoughts about
you. Well, see, here's the problem, though. The reason he had that opinion was because he wasn't alive when Mike... Well, he was, but you know what I mean.
It doesn't matter, though, because Marcus is the same age as him, or maybe a year older. Marcus was like, that was one of the dumber things I'd ever heard.
Well, he also was recruited by Mike Riley.
But see, here's my point is, I think there's a difference between a young person who does the time and research into things versus somebody who's young and goes... Well, Skip Bayless is famous, and that's all they're driven by is fame, so let me give a hot take that has no merit at all behind it. There's a big difference there.
There is.
You jump into those waters, and sure, I'll go, you're a young idiot.
Right, you don't know what you're talking
about. But you could also be that same age, and if you're informative, and you understand history to a certain extent, I don't care if you're 22, if you're 24.
You're willing to look past it.
Right. It's not a big deal to me.
I think there's always an initial backlash. There's an initial, like, who the hell is this kid?
Right.
That's where your mind first, that's where everybody's mind first goes when there's somebody of a age gap younger than you. And then if you prove that you know what you're talking about and you can do the job, then you forget about it. It's not a big deal. But you have to prove yourself, I think, to the olds.
Yeah.
And if you can't, then they're never going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Well, the thing I've noticed, too, about us is less and less, we don't really get those texts like, you're young, you don't know anymore. Because at this point, we've been doing it for 5-6 years.
Right, it goes away after a while.
As you mentioned, I have like almost a 7-year-old. So like at some point, that doesn't really hold any water.
I did appreciate the listener texted in. I just assume you guys are always 25 and Sook is Old Man River. Those are fair assumptions, right? I mean, that's probably how most people feel.
Sukanik's not even 40 years old yet.
No, he's not.
No, he's the fourth youngest of the programming crew. I'm the oldest, then it's Rop and Cam, and then I think
Sook, then Sook. Dusty.
Yeah.
Dusty.
Then me, then you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of yeah, like, I'm the pop Monday through Friday. Yeah.
Of the Monday through Friday hose. Yeah. I'm the little baby.
Yeah. And you and Mike.
Is Lynch older than you?
No, I think Mike's a little younger.
No, I'm slightly older than Mike Lynch.
It's like a month, like 2 months, right?
Yeah. Or something like that. Buck, I think, is pretty close to you.
And he's a year older than me. So yeah, he's pretty close.
Yeah. So I'm the old man of the crew.
Yeah. You're already squinting like an old man, too. You got, I know the sun's in your eyes, but.
Sun's in my eyes.
When you
here.
Squint like that, you got that real old man.
Leave me alone. See, everybody has ageism to a certain extent.
So, what are we? 47 to 25 is our range. I'm 47.
Who's 25?
Is Lynch 25?
No, Lynch is older than that.
See, Swag thinks you're 25.
You think I'm 25 years old, don't you?
No, I thought Lynch was.
Okay.
Well, we just said Lynch is only a couple months
younger. How old do you think I am, Swigart?
You're 27.
No.
Nope.
Oh. When'd you get old?
Wow. See? The perception, man.
It is very interesting. But to think I'm 23, and it was funny because yesterday I did get carded trying to buy booze. And
well,
then I also
well,
had
I some, see.
But I also had somebody
yeah,
else
no
go,
facial hair.
Is this really your credit card?
Ooh.
When I bought pizza,
ooh.
Even though the credit card was clearly mine.
I think it's just your face.
I said, yeah, here's my identification.
No facial hair, freckles, the whole bit.
That is a, that's a genetic disorder. I can't do anything about that.
I don't know why you decided to start the show with this instead of your shirtless gym selfie.
I was not on Twitter, apparently.
I don't put it on Twitter.
He put it on Instagram.
I put it on Instagram.
Oh, well, see, I'm too old for Instagram, so there we go.
Sprague's nipples are all over Instagram. I opened my Instagram app last night. I get home. I'm, like, sitting around. We did the, like, lights for leashes walk, and, you know, kind of a fun time. And I get home. I'm popping my Instagram open, and what hits me square in the forehead is a couple of Sprague nipples.
Might have a company he might be interested in applying for in Australia later in Staten Story.
Oh. See, now you got me. You got me interested. We got nipple talk coming up on Stat or Story. I'm in. I'm all the way in. Yeah, I liked your comment too, by the way.
Yeah, Sprague put like a collage of like 15 pictures up. Like,
I put five. But
it's
okay.
Here's my birthday, great year. These are all my wonderful moments. And there's a shirtless gym selfie over a picture of me and you, your work wife.
Well, as I put,
it's like I got beat out by a pair of nipples.
Wow.
And I told you in the response, the nipples have been with me longer. I had to give them a shout out this year. I haven't put up a shirtless pic in quite a while. I felt like it was time.
Okay.
Let's do it. We got a good show. Kerry Ayers at 1 o'clock in the 1 o'clock hour. If you have any questions, by the way, on the Jailblazer era, maybe the current Blazer team, just Kerry's thoughts in general as somebody who covers the Blazers on a regular basis, you can text us at the Better You Today text line at 55305. We will have a probably a mini Q&A sesh because Dirt and I have a lot of things we want to get to with him. About the book that he released, the Jailblazer book. But I also kind of want some of you listeners, if you're curious about the Jailblazer era, something you've been dying to know, something maybe you've heard, but you don't know if it's true, what have you, you can let us know at 55305. Kerry will be in here for an entire hour at 1. We've got Stat or Story. We got a good one. And we're going to start it with the Trailblazers, who drop yet another game. And it just, it's hilarious. It's hilarious what a game, a difference a game can make. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. You know, one final thought on the age thing. As some pretty funny texts at 55305. I was doing something on a website for sports betting. And it asked for the age, birthday. Why do websites still allow you to put that you were born in 2017 if you have to be 18 to 21 years older?
Right.
Has anybody figured that out?
Right. Shouldn't you have to go all the way back to at least the age limit you're to click on?
Yes.
Can you prove to me that you're of age to do this?
I was scrolling. I'm like, wait, You think you know I have to be over a certain age, and you're allowing me to say my birthday was in 2017.
Just a baby snatching a computer, making some sports bets here.
Out here from the womb, laying coin on teams I like. Well, the Blazers ruined my birthday. They lost 111-102. Told you the defense sucked, and oh, look at that. The defense sucked. You had 21 points from Luka Doncic, who sealed it up with a step-back three-pointer late on what looked like, by the way, a travel from Dennis Smith, but they didn't call it. Let's see. Wes Matthews beat us with 17. It's just collective team effort. Harrison Barnes had 11. Dallas, I mean, they beat Portland 111-102. Portland goes from first to eighth in about a two-week span now. And I found it funny. Jason Quick wrote an article a couple days ago about the Blazers and said, hey, it's not about warm and fuzzy stories anymore. It's not about people liking each other. They need to start showing their fans this is something more than a feel-good story, right? Like they can actually win ball games that matter.
Right.
And in it, Dame has a quote that says, oh, I'm not worried. I haven't talked to the team because I don't think there's anything to talk about.
We'll be fine. Don't worry.
That was one game ago. And in the game since that story came out, Dallas last night, at halftime, he gave a speech because he said, yeah, I could identify there was a problem. I almost wonder if Dame, and as much as I love Dame, I almost wonder he's just been in it so long and so used to what this is that he can identify it the same way maybe he could a couple years ago. Because here we are yet again. They've lost 8 of 11.
They sat on November 11th at 10-3 after a nice win at home against Boston before that long road trip kicked in. And since then, they're 3-8. This thing has the floor has fallen through on them. And I mean, there's a number of reasons why. We highlighted a few of them yesterday. Defensively, they're just atrocious. They gave up 60 points again in the first half to Dallas last night. They couldn't get stops when they needed them. When they were trying to make a comeback, they didn't look like the more aggressive or energetic team, which I think you would expect from a squad who's been reeling a little bit and is somewhat desperate for a win at this point. They're continuing to struggle away from home, which has been a problem for them now for a while. And I think primarily the issue has been, at least in the last 11 games since they were 10-3, the main issue has been the bench scoring. I mean, it's disappeared. Early in the year, you had Stauskas and everybody. He was like the new favorite Blazer because that's what we do every year as a fan base. We fall in love with the new guy right away. He has that big opening night against the Lakers. The bench unit was really outscoring their opponents on almost any given night. And you look at the last 11 games, they've disappeared. Stauskas is a non-factor. Sometimes he doesn't play a ton. Myers Leonard, like, just stop. It's not something you can rely on night in and night out. If he gives you a good game a week, you know, hey, you think you're lucky stars. Seth Curry has been, I don't even know if he's on the team or not. Can somebody confirm that for me?
No, he's not. He's been terrible this year.
Evan Turner's getting sloppy and turning the ball over a little bit more. And I think the bigger disappointment in all of it for me is Zach Collins was a guy who early in the year looked like he had taken that next step and was a huge contributing factor. And he's been non-existent as well. So I go back to that Zach Lowe piece that was written about their decision to keep this all together. Paul Allen wanted to blow it up. And there was some good notes in there about how Terry Stotts was kind of terrified early in this season of his bench. Because they're switching the rotations. They want Dame and CJ to play more together. They didn't want to stagger him like he's done in the past, trusting Evan Turner with the second unit. And he was talking about how much faith and trust that it took for him early in the year to say, okay, we're in a tight game or maybe we're trailing and I need my bench to come in and give me some production because I got to sit those guys and I want them to play together. And his faith was rewarded early in the season. Guess what's gone now?
The bench.
The faith in the bench. It has disappeared. And I think you ask yourself, who's the real Portland bench? The unit you saw for the first 13 games or the unit you've seen for the last 11? And I would put my money on the unit you've seen from the last 11.
I think because of the names, you would absolutely probably bank on the last 11 versus the first 13. I mean, you mentioned Nick Stauskas, who has come crashing back down to earth. He scored 24 in the Lakers, and everybody goes, oh, my God, we found the gem of the offseason. Well, there was a reason nobody had signed him. Seth Curry coming off leg injury. He hasn't shown us anything. I'm almost wondering why he's playing at this point, because I don't think he offers you anything on the defensive end either. And if he's not doing anything offensively, I don't get it.
He's good for his 5 points and 3 of 7 shooting every night.
Zach Collins, as you mentioned, has had quite the disappearing act, I would say, over the last 9 games, 10 games or so. Myers-Leonard is no longer having a feel-good run. He didn't even shoot the ball last night.
I thought he was a did he even play last night?
Yeah, he played 6 minutes.
He did. Okay, he got in.
And by the way, I know Quick put it in, so this isn't like a knock at him. I just want to point out there was a part in his piece about Myers and Terry going, I don't think it's any secret Terry doesn't like Myers. If you watched Myers play at all, even in the middle of his good run that he gave you for about seven games, he would pass up a shot, and Terry, this the body language of Terry of like, the hell are you doing? Shoot the damn basketball and stop hesitating.
I know.
I had somebody ask me last night, they're like, hey, you know, he may not be that great. Like, why is Caleb not play? And I said, you know, I think there's a couple reasons for that. I think Terry gets real stuck in his rotational ways. Like, once he has guys playing at a certain, just certain minutes and, you know, just the way that he rotates players, I think he's stuck in that for a while. And sometimes he needs to break out of that. See Noah Vonleh in the starting lineup last season. If you go look at Caleb Swanigan, who, by the way, I mean, if he's not showing it to Terry in practice, that's right on Swanigan.
There's a reason he's not playing.
But since that double-double output he put against Indiana, he played 19 minutes that game. I don't think he's played double-digit minutes since that moment. Hard to show that maybe you're not a bust, sure, and maybe you can do something if you're not given the minutes.
Sure.
And the other one, and I'm sorry, this is the most, I'm the most dumbfounded about this of all the things that are wrong with Portland. Is there a fix on the trade market? Maybe there is, but I don't know what that is at the moment. So I'm just talking about this team specifically. I don't understand at all why Jake Layman doesn't play. Can anybody answer that? Jake Layman was shooting 50% from the field. Yeah. He was shooting about 40% clip from the three. He's averaging, or when he played, he averaged more points per game than Mo Harkless. And I get Mo Harkless has been here, and he's probably the better overall player, but he's not doing jack S for you right now. I don't get not playing Jake Layman. So I think this is just, it's snowballing into something, and maybe they can change this and win a few games and get people off their backs. I think there's no doubt they'll win Thursday. Maybe I'll be wrong on that.
Sure.
But this month is continuing to look more and more tough the way that they're playing. And I feel like there isn't just one solution unless you just want to go very generic, which is easy. They don't have a talented team.
They're just not that good.
I think we've all
known that's the main reason. That, yeah. That's why we're here. This is a team that, outside of a 13-game winning streak last year, was barely above 500 squad. And you can make a clear argument that they are worse than last year. From what you've seen from Stauskas and Curry,
hey, you don't have Ed coming off the
bench. Is there a huge difference between Connaughton and Napier? I mean, you basically just swapped average bench players, and you took away Ed Davis, who was a good defensive guy, a rim protector, and he'd grab you 13 rebounds every time he played. You lost some depth for your bigs.
How close are they? This is kind of a broad, big-picture question, but I like those questions more.
Uh-huh.
How much worse does this need to get where you think they lose the city? Now, I know this is very easy for you to look at the text line and see everybody texting in how over it they are.
Well, how do you define that, though? Like, people stop going to games?
No, well, I don't think we'll ever have that. But no. The attendance, I mentioned this last year, the attendance was a little spotty.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been spotty a few games this year as well. How much worse does this get where it's noticeable and everybody's like, boy, Portland is not even on this team anymore?
I think New Year's Day.
Yeah, if they have a real bad December.
You get a real bad December, you go to Utah on Christmas Day and get blown out by the Jazz, and all of a sudden you're 3, 4, 5 games under 500 on New Year's Day. They'll be coming off the rooftops clamoring for a big move at the trade deadline.
Think about this for a second. This is how crazy the Western Conference is this year. You right now, so the Blazers went from the 1 seed to the 8 seed. Nobody's screen grabbing the standings anymore, but that's where they are. They are.
Why you got to ruin people's fun if we're in first?
Well, it's like we did that. Like, yeah, I know.
We haven't done that in a while.
What, taking pictures of the standings?
Been first in the West.
Oh, but yeah.
Let those people have a day.
Winning. All right, fine.
Doesn't 12-5 seem like 3 months ago?
Yes, it does.
It really does.
You are 2 games above being the second worst team in the Western Conference. Think about that for a second. So right now you have Phoenix at the bottom of the West. They're 4-20. And by the way, Phoenix still has a brighter future than you because of their young players. They're going to get the number one pick. They're going to get Zion Williamson. Yeah, to call me crazy right now, we'll see who has a better roster in 3 years, okay? Just write it down right now.
You're so
guarantee
angry.
It. Book it, Dano.
Boy, you are right. We're 2 games
away.
They
are 4-20. The next team up in the standings is San Antonio at 11-13. You are 2 games above that. You were 16 teams in the West, right?
Yeah, but you'd
15.
Be the
15.
You'd be the 8th seed with 11 wins
sure,
in the
right.
East.
Sure.
But I still maintain, I think the top of the East.
You were two games. If you lose your next two and everybody else wins below you, you were the 14th out of 15 teams in the Western Conference.
Well, I mean, look at the West, though. I just mentioned the 8th seed in the East is 11. You have a ton of teams with 9, 8, 8, 5,
yeah,
5,
the East
5.
Sucks.
The bottom of the East is garbage. The bottom of the West is an 11-win team in the Spurs who...
Outside of Phoenix, everybody is right around 500.
Right, and I think some of the, like the Kings being 12-11, it's a fun story. At some point, I do believe some of these teams will come crashing down. But, as I mentioned yesterday, you got teams below them, Houston, the Jazz, the Pelicans with Davis, if he can stay healthy, and maybe the T-Wolves and Spurs. Are we thinking all those teams don't go in the playoffs? Because right now, you're barely in, and those teams are not. Like, do you think you're making it and Houston's not? That would be quite an upset, right? So,
right.
I don't know, man. I don't, because the problem is playing this, like, how do you fix it? Well, we're all aware of what you do. The problem is the guy that needs to know it the most will not acknowledge it publicly, and that's a big problem. Read some thoughts on the Blazers as they lose yet again, this time to the Mavs. They are now the 8th seed in the West playoffs. They get Phoenix. That's at home, right? Thursday? Yeah, tomorrow they get Phoenix coming to town.
Devin Booker's a fun watch. I mean, that's a terrible team, but
sat out.
Oh, is he hurt right now?
He didn't play last night with an injury, so.
They got destroyed by the Kings. Ayton was terrible. We'll talk a little more Blazers. I got some NFL stuff I want to get to as well, and then Kerry Eggers will join us for an hour in the 1 o'clock, starting at 1 o'clock, to talk about his Jailblazer book. We'll get to that next. Got some NFL stuff I want to get to. I had a listener say, hey, where's the conversation about the Oregon penalties for their athletic department?
Yeah, all those bunch of cheaters down there.
Let me sum it up for you. We can get to this later if you want. It's your alma mater. I'm not going to cape up for them because they're on our station now. I'll just be honest with you. I think it's stupid. Let me tell you what it boils down to.
Being persecuted by the NCAA.
A trainer for Kelly Graves, who is the women's basketball coach, was rebounding for one of the players after practice. You're not supposed to do that. He will be suspended for 2 games. And a director of player personnel for the men's program was watching too much practice basketball. There's a limit on it in what you can watch, and he was watching too many hours. He went 62 hours over. So because he wanted to scout some players and because somebody was helping the women practice jump shots, they got hit by the NCAA today. I know the women's track was involved, but...
Yeah, they had a... that was the other funny one, too, because of the whole... Remember when North Carolina created a whole fake program to get kids through and nothing ever happened from the NCAA?
Something about a grade.
There
that
was
got
a professor,
switched.
Like an adjunct professor, that changed a grade from an F to a B-, apparently, so a female runner could continue running, something along those lines, and that was one of the accusations, or one of the violations as well. So...
No!
But on top
can
of
I just it, drop that since on, Mark Emmert's not going to punish teams actually getting caught cheating?
Yeah, because that was the funny part about that, because the story came out about those infractions today. And then, NCAA President Mark Emmert said, don't expect any sanctions stemming from the federal investigation into college basketball. No sanctions are coming for that one. Don't worry about it.
God, everybody's focused on Larry Scott. How about the NCAA? Just how stupid they are.
It goes back to every time we talked about that trial. It's like, does this even matter? Like, does this matter? Nothing's going to happen from this.
Do you care about this as an Oregon alum?
No, this does nothing for me. No.
They're on probation, by the way. It just means once this is over, they just go away.
The basketball ops guy got a show cause for 2 years, I believe. As you mentioned, the female basketball coach has to sit out 2 games.
And they got fined. He's a trainer.
Yeah, they got fined $5,000 plus 1% of basketball revenues or
they're
something.
They're just killing them where it hurts, the pocketbook. Oregon doesn't have $5,000.
I love that, too. 1% of the basketball revenue? What? How do you come up with that number, NCAA?
Well, they got to think of some way to get in there and get some money without looking too greedy about it. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll dive back into that later, or maybe that about sums it up to me. But I saw that story. I read about it today. And Oregon Athletic Department hit with NCAA violations, and that's basically summing it up of what they were. We were talking Blazers and just the struggle. So, Swag, I think I kind of like your timeline here. And if you missed the segment 10 minutes ago, I asked, how much worse does this have to get for them to kind of lose you. Now, the tough part, I think, is trying to get real feelings on this versus reading the text line, because I think the text line is overwhelming. They never had me emotionally. I stopped caring. I'm dead inside.
Well, we got a few people saying, calm down. They'll still win 50 games. So those fans are out there as well.
Boy, they'll win 50 games.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. But so I'm saying there's representatives on both sides.
Well, I think the city, though, is a tougher thing to gauge because, again, it's a baby of ours. It's our firstborn. It's something we love. And I'm not telling you to not go to games. I get why people go to games. But I just wonder, when does this start to affect the people in those corporate offices of going, wow, you know, our middle-of-the-road basketball team suddenly is not selling tickets the way it once was. When does that happen?
And I think, you get through the holidays, and if it's, you know, if they can't pull out of the skid, they got a really difficult schedule coming up for the next 3 weeks. And if it's not getting any better and they find themselves sub 500 down there in 11th or 12th in the standings, even though they might just be a game or two out of a playoff spot, I think that Christmas Day game when everybody is home watching, they haven't played on Christmas Day for like, I don't know, 5 years
that's
or something.
That's the Brandon Roy era, it feels like.
That's at Utah, which is a team you should be battling with.
Well, and they just made that. I know Korver's not going to be groundbreaking for them, but,
no,
but they made
they,
an
adding
addition.
A shooter. They're adding a shooter to space the floor. Yep. So I think if you're there and you're still kind of muddled in this purgatory of 500 basketball, I think that's when people start to want, because there's no fan base in the NBA that wants to believe more than Blazer fan. Trust me, the desire, it does not take much to get this fan base saying, okay, we got it figured out. Now we're ready to go.
Well, for as doom and gloom as people are right now, if they win the next five games, the tone's going to be completely different.
Oh, it's going to shift back.
My emotions won't change because I know who this team is. Like, we've seen this movie too many times to overreact one way or the other. And that, to me, has been the only main frustrating thing. And it gets back to the issue of the organizational depth right now, of who's making decisions, who's in charge, who decides to pull the plug. Because, again, going back to the Zach Lowe piece, they wanted to blow this thing up last summer. They said, this is ridiculous. We were a 3 seed, got swept in the first round. We clearly can't hang with the upper teams in the Western Conference. Why would we roll the balls out and play with this roster again? Now everybody talked Paul Allen out of it. The team came back, made a couple of minor changes, and guess what? You're getting the same exact result. There's no shock there. I think that's the frustration I think most Blazer fans, I think like me, have had now is, at what point do you just make some change? Now, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it's a bad move. Maybe it blows up in your – I don't know, but to do something. Like that, to me, has been the ultimate frustration. Like, we can all sit here right now – and I don't want to go into the tanking conversation, but we can sit here right now and mock the Mariners for blowing up their team and look at how many guys from the opening day roster aren't there anymore and look at all the pieces they traded away. At least they're doing something about it. They were stuck in that no man's land. We can't make the playoffs. We're above 500. We're not bad enough to get a top five pick. We'll keep scratching at the surface, but we can't break through. We've spent all this money. Nothing's working. How about we take a new approach? Now, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe the Mariners traded guys and none of the prospects they got in return work out, but at least they're doing something about it. And I think that is the ultimate frustration of, we can all agree, looking at this roster, we know what its limitations are. Nobody disagrees on that. And yet there's nothing that ever gets done about it.
How much does not having an owner worry you? Because let's go back to that story.
Me.
Paul Allen was the one saying, I'm not bifurcating. That was embarrassing.
It terrifies me because I don't know who's in charge. And I know Neil O'Shea doesn't want to trade any of these guys.
Well, if you have nobody in charge, then nobody's pressing Neil O'Shea to make any kind of move.
Exactly. Exactly. And who knows if he's just biding his time until he takes another job.
That wouldn't shock me at all.
Right? So what's his incentive to make a move?
Yeah, he has none.
It's terrifying right now.
You're still going to games. You're still selling out. You're still showing up. You're still buying the overpriced merch. I mean, look, Portland in a weird way, like as a city, it's kind of like a look in the mirror. We're kind of responsible for this, right? Like the 2015, 16, the year after LA when they went to the second round, Nobody will deny how fun that season was, right?
Yeah, everybody caught Blazer fever.
All of us did.
Yep.
And since then, they're just reaping the benefits of a surprise season. Still going to games, still buying into this team will turn the corner, still buying that this team can get to a point where we're all happy and satisfied, still buying all the merch that's overpriced by $35 to $40.
Right.
We're still doing all of that. So I know Neil O'Shea is responsible for the roster. I know some people are mad at Terry Stotts as a coach or what have you. we're kind of responsible. This is part of what makes it tough for Portland as a city is
we can't quit them, man.
We can't quit them, and the only time we have quit them was when we did what Kerry wrote about, the Jailblazers.
And it wasn't until those teams started losing. We didn't quit them because they were bad characters.
Right.
We quit them because they lost.
Yeah, we still went to the playoff rounds when they got swept by the Lakers in five games.
And then when the bottom fell out and they started to suck, then we stopped going to games.
Yes.
So that's
we were quickly brought right back in
with Roy and Aldridge.
You get a couple young guys and you don't have criminals on your team and it changes things. So I think we're almost as a city. Are there roster moves that need to be made? Absolutely. Is the GM good in terms of building a roster? I would more lean towards no. I think he's great at evaluating talent coming out of a draft, but we can argue about that at a different point. But we as a city still embrace it. And you know what? It's hard to for people like the McGowans, the Olshays, the power players of that organization. It's hard for them to even be thinking about moving on or being forced to make a change if you, the proverbial you here in the city, still buys all the way in no matter what. Hard to move on from that.
Yep.
All right, we'll get to some NFL news and notes, and then Kerry Eggers will join us for an hour in studio to talk about his Jailblazer book. All of that ahead on Dirt and Sprague. All right, columnist and author Kerry Eggers in studio for an hour coming up. Talk about his Jailblazer book.
I have a basketball-heavy show today.
Yeah, it is a basketball-heavy show. But we're going to mix it up and go to some NFL before we talk with Kerry. And I thought there was some good news and notes I wanted to get to today. And I'll start with the news out of Denver. This is not good. Denver are heading to Santa Clara to take on the Niners. And their star wide receiver, Emmanuel Sanders, went down. He was carted off. And the team believes that he has a torn Achilles.
Ouch.
And he is out for the year. They're waiting for tests, but that's their belief right now. So Denver could be without Emmanuel Sanders the rest of the season, which is very unfortunate because they were starting to kind of get it going offensively. And starting to kind of help the defense out a little bit because they were struggling early, but now they've got it clicking and you lose him.
Well, and they got, they're only a game behind Baltimore. Baltimore holds that last wild card spot right now in the AFC. It's 7-5. So Denver's sitting there at 6-6. And they're an interesting team because they're in a tough division because they have to play Kansas City twice. You go back to both of those games, they were one-score games. They lost, obviously, the Monday night game, remember, was 27-23. They had a chance to win it at the end. Then they lost, 30-23. They lost to the Texans because they missed the last-second field goal. So, they've had some tough luck losses this year, and now you lose your leading wide receiver with almost 900 yards and four touchdowns on the year. Philip Lindsay's been a big bright spot for him.
Just name offensive player of the week
or something,
month,
right? Keenum's been all up and down, but he's played a little bit better as of late. And it felt like you're right. They had some momentum going with three straight wins, a game at the 49ers this week. Then they get the Browns, then they're at the Raiders. So they still have a chance to rattle off some wins, but that's just a tough blow when you take away the top target.
Yeah, so Denver might be without Emmanuel Sanders the rest of the season. To Buffalo, remember that trade for Kelvin Benjamin from Carolina?
I do.
The Kelvin Benjamin era is done. They cut him yesterday.
Yikes. What did they give up for him? Do you remember that off the top of your head?
I'll look up.
I have to Google that bad boy. That guy, man, what a short NFL career. I'm sure somebody will take a flyer on him now. But
why would you pick him up? He's out of shape. He's lazy. He's got a bad attitude.
Remember his whole interview he did where he threw Cam Newton under the bus? He said if he had a real quarterback, he'd be putting up all these big numbers, and Cam Newton was inaccurate.
Ooh, Buffalo traded a 3rd and a 7 to Carolina for him.
Ooh.
They cut him before the year was over.
Ooh.
Not good at all. They also released Andre Holmes. And they signed Denzel Rice and Mike Love from practice squad.
He had a huge rookie season, I want to say, and then it was year two, I believe, that he was hurt, and they went to the Super Bowl
without
him.
Yeah,
their best year, and Cam Newton had that MVP season without him, which everybody was like, what? How is this possible? Watching him at Florida, and this is, again, how inaccurate of a science it is, man. Watching him at Florida State, that guy was an animal. Couldn't stop. He was big. He was strong.
He had the game-winning touchdown
in the national title game to beat Auburn. Like he was going to be a big deal, and that was like 4 years ago.
I think once I started seeing him regularly on the NFL field, it just kind of clicked. Of like, yeah, this dude's just fat. He's lazy. He doesn't eat right. And if he would have taken care of his body, probably would have been a beast because he's so big. But
I want to go back. So yeah, it was his rookie year. He had the he had 73 catches for over 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns.
1,000 yards.
And then he came back after they went to the Super Bowl in 15, came back in 16, had 940 yards and 7 touchdowns. And then obviously last year fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah. So we'll see if he lands somewhere else. I'm sure he'll get another shot, but he might just be one of those guys eating himself right out of the NFL. Cincinnati, as we got some NFL news and notes here, Kerry Ager is going to join us at the top of the 1 o'clock hour. Cincinnati, who is without Andy Dalton the rest of the year, they have officially shut down AJ Green. He has been put on IR.
That's smart.
So I think they're officially in tank mode of how many more losses can we accumulate and where can we be in the draft, because they're shutting guys down left and right, and they kind of just... they've given up.
Look, you need to make that move. There's no point in AJ Green is going to be a focal point of your franchise moving forward. No matter who your coach and your quarterback is, you're not moving that guy. So you want to make sure he's healthy long term. No point in playing him. It reminds me of the Aaron Rodgers thing last year. Remember Aaron Rodgers came back for the one game against Carolina. They didn't win. I think they were mathematically out of the playoff chase, and they sat him for the last couple of weeks. They said, there's no point in playing him because he could further injure it. That's a smart move for Cincinnati. Your season's done at this point. And now you just got to keep, as a gambler, keep your eye on what those Bengal lines are going to be, because that's going to be a bad football team.
Yes, yes, it is. Chicago's got a huge game against the L.A. Rams this weekend. They're coming off their loss against the Giants. Chase Daniel's been filling in at quarterback. And the latest from Matt Nagy is that Mitchell Trubisky might play this weekend.
Ah, we got a might. He better play, because if he doesn't, no thanks on that game. I don't need to see Chase Daniel go against the Rams and Jared Goff. Did you see Trubisky's quote, by the way, at his press conference today? So he stood up at the podium and he was talking to the media, and they asked him, what's it going to be like, or how are you feeling about facing the best team in the NFC?
Yeah.
And he said, I face the best team in the NFC every day in practice.
Yeah. Did you see the follow-up to that?
No. What was the follow-up?
That's a fake quote.
Oh, is it really?
That reporter made it up. And when pressed, he just confessed to this, by the way, our buddy in Chicago.
Yeah,
because
I
him.
Saw the tweet with the quote, and yep. I was like, that's an awesome quote.
Our buddy in Chicago works at our sister station, said, dude, I have to listen to audio all day for these different shows. He didn't say that one time in the presser.
What a bummer.
And the guy just came out and said, well, I did that more as like a joke because I love him and I'm trying to pump the fans up. And people are like, you're supposed to be a legitimate media person.
Oh, he got me. I bit on the bait.
Yeah, no, that was a fake quote. He never said that.
Well, he'd be a lot cooler if he did. He should come out and say something like that.
Fake news.
I love having the confidence in your own squad.
And then Washington needs a quarterback because Colt McCoy broke his leg like two plays in on Monday Night Football.
Hey, they signed Kaepernick, huh?
No. Oh. Jay Gruden said Colin Kaepernick cannot pick up the playbook enough in time.
Oh, okay.
For them to be successful with him. So they went and signed Josh Johnson, who has not thrown a pass in like 2 years.
Has it only been 2 years? I thought it was longer than that.
Maybe it has been more than 2 years.
He's playing in the new Mike Riley Football League.
Is it the AAFL?
Whatever the hell that league.
The American Allegiance Football League.
Yeah, he is one of the quarterbacks in that league. And he said to his new team in that league, don't worry, I'm still going to play in that league.
I just want to point out for the folks that will never change their opinion on Colin Kaepernick, and I'm fine with that. Jay Gruden said they could not bring Colin Kaepernick in because there's not enough time to get used to the playbook, and then they signed Josh Johnson. Just going to point that out and leave that there for you.
I can't even find like a Josh Johnson like stat page on
Football Reference.
On ESPN. There's not even anything popping up, man.
Because he couldn't do anything when he played. So I'm sure this is going to go well for Washington. And one final note, not NFL related. The XFL release their teams and jerseys and stuff today.
No one cares.
They're going to be in Seattle.
Why would you go to an NFL market?
They're in like a lot of NFL markets. They're playing in the stadiums too.
Am I the only one that thinks that's ridiculously dumb?
Well, it's the off season for the NFL. So maybe they can entice people to still be football.
Wouldn't you want to go to places that don't have a chance to watch normal football? Therefore, there's like, hey, an incentive. Let's go watch the football game.
Is there anybody that really thinks this is going to work?
Yeah.
Really?
There's probably people out there.
Vince McMahon.
It's not going to work. I'm sorry. We love football. We also like the break we get from football because it builds up the appetite for football again.
There's also...
You can't eat Thanksgiving every day. You got to take a break right. So you get excited for the next Thanksgiving.
There's also, like, the difference between products, too. Like, you can love...
Josh Johnson's going to be a starting quarterback.
Right. You can love basketball, and then you turn on an occasional college game, and you're like, ugh.
Right.
I'm not just going to watch it because I love basketball. That game sucks.
You're
I'm
seeking
turning
out
that off.
G League action?
No. Nobody's watching that nonsense.
And you don't have the money to go steal somebody big in the NFL. And by the way, one player would not get me to suddenly switch my opinion on it.
What if Le'Veon Bell plays in the XFL?
I don't care. Good for Le'Veon Bell. I'm sure he'll roast him, and then that'll be it.
Yeah.
So there's some NFL news and notes sprinkled in with a little XFL news for you. Seattle's got a team. Hockey team, XFL, they've got it all. All right, our second hour, we're going to be joined by columnist. Jeez, dude, how long is that?
Fire up the horn, baby. Let's go.
We're going to be joined by columnist and author Kerry Eggers, who just released his new book, The Jailblazers, highlighting the run of one of the more interesting times in NBA history from any team. He'll be in studio for the entire hour. We'll discuss his book. We'll talk some Blazers. You guys can ask questions at 55305 that we can ask him. And dive into a little MLB to Portland talk probably too with him. Kerry Eggers been in Portland a long time. He's got the new book, The Jailblazers, and he'll be in studio for hour two, just ahead. Dirt and Sprague back with more on The Fan.